Welcome back to Art House Rewind. My name's Brian.
I'm Arliss.
And we're going to talk about all things film, art, and culture as they pertain to Billings, Montana. Arliss, how was the weekend?
Yeah, the weekend was good. We got one of the movies that we're talking about was our busiest. So,
Yeah, and kind of unusual that, you know, I sprinkle horror films in now and again and don't expect them to do super well, but it was our most popular weekend.
I was expecting like 20 people opening night, and so I was sending people to the theater side, and I like turned around and I was like, oh, I got to get down there.
So, we will talk about that one in just a bit. But first, the three things you got to know that are happening this weekend at Art House. Really, a lot of it comes down to we have new films opening at Art House. Everything is going away, with the exception of Late Night with the Devil. We'll hold on to for another week. But other things we've got three films. One is a documentary on William Shatner called You Can Call Me Bill. So, you know, if you're a Star Trek fan or any of that, you know, check that one out. Also, I am opening Problemista, which is written and directed by Julio Torres, who was in Together Together, and he's one of the creators of Los Spookies. So if you enjoy any of those are fun ones to check out. And then also, I am opening one that I've been wanting to bring in for a while, sort of our indie spotlight this week, is Sometimes I Think About Dying. This is one that I saw a screener for several months ago and really wanted to bring in. And side note, it is co-produced by a fellow film student of mine from Bozeman, who has also worked on, he lives in that Portland area and he works on a lot of projects there. So he's worked on things like Portlandia and some Kelly Reichardt films. He was a co-producer on Pig. He's a co-producer on this. He's one of the busier people out of our class that has continued working. And I wanted to get him involved, but I think he is just too busy at the time that he was unable to record anything or come on down, that sort of thing. But definitely a fun one to check out, Daisy Ridley and this sort of, I wouldn't call it a dark comedy, but sort of a melodramatic comedy in that, you know, it's kind of sad, but also, you know, super interesting and funny to that right sort of introverted personality. Mm-hmm. So definitely check that one out. Of course, Babcock also has things going on. We've got Virgin Suicides. We've got Ten Commandments. We've got Twilight series is kicking off. So, ArthousBillings.com. See what all is happening. So, all right. So we're going to talk about one of the films we opened this last weekend. It is Late Night with the Devil. Arliss, what do people need to know about Late Night with the Devil?
This guy named Jack Delroy, he's a late night show host, and mm-hmm. he's trying to save his show because his contract is about to end and his ratings have dipped. So he does a special Halloween episode. Mm-hmm. And so he brings on people like a psychic medium, brings an author just published a book where a girl is possessed. Mm-hmm. And then everything just kind of goes awry.
Yeah.
Especially for a Halloween episode that's on live TV or late night TV. So.
Yeah, no, it's kind of built as this sort of lost episode of 70s television. It does cut away from that format a little bit to get a little, you know, behind the scenes during commercial breaks.
Yep.
But overall, it's going for a very specific look, a very specific time period, and overall, I'd say it's good. I wouldn't say it's amazing at that, but it does pretty good.
Because that was the stuff that I really liked about the movie, is just mm-hmm. the aesthetics of it. And then just knowing, because I am a fan of, like, when I'm looking at celebrities and stuff from the 70s, like, my favorite thing is seeing them on Johnny Carson. Because Johnny Carson, I was introduced to him through Joan Rivers when she was on the show. Okay. And so then it just kind of... So just knowing what late night shows used to be compared to how they are now, where
Your Dick Cavett's, your Johnny Carson's, those sort of shows. yeah, I thought it did really well. It does play a little bit in that, you know, essentially this is almost a found footage sort of film. Mm-hmm. I feel like it, you know, most people, I'm sure it works just fine. It does bend the reality of that a little bit in the sense of there's certain close-ups that wouldn't necessarily have been close-ups. There's audience reactions that the camera would not have been there sort of thing.
Especially with the type of camera technology that they had. It was like heavier cameras, and it's, that thing kind of like moves around a lot during the show.
Some of the quote-unquote dream sequences, or, you know, the we're getting into a little bit of spoiler territory here, I guess, of there's a point where the sidekick of the host is hypnotized, and the way that the camera captures that, it would not have actually been like that, but it gets you absorbed into the film, obviously. As a as a storytelling device, it works great. In the reality of this being live television,
I can't turn off part of my brain. It was like, it got me for that quick second, then immediately I was thinking about it, and I was like, wait a minute.
I think it's well done. It's flawed, but it is definitely engaging enough. The premise of it, of course, being that there's this girl that is brought on to the television set that is supposedly possessed, and then he, in his ambition to gain more ratings, he wants to communicate with the possessed demon inside of her. And things go awry from there. But I thought that was an interesting premise, and I wanted them to go further with it.
That's what I was surprised about. It's just kind of the overall movie is just the like the downfall, quote unquote, of Jack Delroy, of how he like lost episode, but just seeing like. It's just about the chaos on his show. That's basically what the movie is. And so the trailer kind of sold me that it was going to be the possession type thing. Yep. But also the movie does bring up that he was part of the, what is that, Tall Tree cult thing he was in.
Part of the Tall Tree, which, you know, essentially led to his wife getting cancer in exchange for his celebrity.
Mm-hmm. and also all of this is... Well, I think the movie spends like 20 minutes introducing who Jack Delroy is.
It spends a good while on introductions, then spends a good amount of time with the psychic and the skeptic, the author that is trying to be the debunking part of this. And
Even though that was another thing, that character, even though he annoyed me, in retrospect, I'm glad that we had him because it just kind of made... the cringiness of when the psychic first comes in.
Yeah.
Really, because, like, he's just trying to... Because he's a dude that just has the... I have $100,000 if you can prove that this is real. But that part that I'm appreciating it more is, like, a lot of this movie for me is because I kind of walked away kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah,
and then,
it's fine. I would like to see, especially, so I just got word before we started recording that a email from IFC, who produced this as sort of the theatrical distributor for Shudder, and this is currently IFC's biggest opening weekend of a film of all time, so that is... super interesting. And with that, I guess, comes the possibility that they might, you know, whether it's this creative team, you know, doing something similar, or if they want to do a direct sequel to this, it is out there. And I'm interested to see them explore this a little better than they did on this first attempt, I guess you could say.
I'd say, like, even if they, like, I hope their filmmaking from then on does find interesting concepts of horror, of things they can put horror situations in, kind of like how this movie does. And because a lot of what doesn't work for me in the end for this is that it's too long for what it is. I mean, I know it's playing a little bit.
I know it's like almost exactly 90 minutes, but it's still like, it's, I would have liked to have seen it tightened up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I did enjoy some of the effects, some of those throwback effects, especially in that hypnosis sequence when he's got all the worms inside of him, and the effect of them coming out of his body is like very much a like latex, you know, sort of thing. It looks cheap, but it was effective not only in the sense of this being a low budget film, but also in the idea of what if this were made in 1977? That's what they would have used.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that aspect of it, for sure.
Another thing I did enjoy is actually, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but the guy that plays Jack Delroy, David Dasmalchian?
Yeah,
Something like that. Anyways.
I avoid trying to say
his last name. I just know him as a character actor that plays freaks in movies, but then like him actually being someone that has to be charming and host a show, I was like, this dude's really good. Like he like carries the movie.
He's probably best known as Polka Dot Man from the Suicide Squad from James Gunn. He's also shown up in a lot of Nolan things as really small characters, but
Yeah, he's usually like memorable when he shows up in another movie. It's like, oh yeah, that guy.
He's in Dune 1.
Yeah. Also, funny thing is that apparently the box office report that came in was that $666,666. Yeah. So perfect for this movie. Yep.
Perfect. Yeah. They probably withheld selling any more tickets after that. I think it's not perfect, but it is definitely well worth checking out, especially for any horror fans we have out there. I think it's imaginative, it's crafty, and I'm excited to see what they do next for sure. The one thing I would say, and a little bit of discourse, we won't go into it too much, since I don't know if either of us have a whole lot to say about it, but part of the discourse around this film is it did unfortunately use some AI art in some of the bumper cards going into commercial breaks, this sort of, you know, we'll be right back sort of thing, and they made it like a spooky skeleton. That was an AI-generated image, which, you know, has kind of commanded a lot of the talk about this film of, you know, the disappointment that they did not pay an artist to do that, especially for what it is. Like, it's not difficult art. It's something that, you know, could have easily been commissioned and fairly inexpensive, I would think. It's not super involved, especially with that old school look.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. I'm disappointed that they did that. I don't think it completely ruins the film for me. It's a disappointment, but I did not even notice it until it started being talked about.
Yeah, because I got pointed out, I just kind of forgot about it until we were going through the title cards. And I was like, oh, yeah, isn't there AI art in this? And like figuring out that's where it was used from. But I'm still the response boycotting this movie. Marvel Secret Invasion used their beginning credits.
Exactly.
It was all like AI art.
They definitely were a much more egregious. And they are definitely, you know, I know that this isn't like micro budget filmmaking, but it's still small budget filmmaking. Cutting corners sucks, but it's a little bit more understandable than Disney, the biggest corporation in filmmaking.
Yeah, just because they're trying to release a TV show during the strike.
Yep,
so.
Exactly. So, and in general, like, yes, I'm disappointed in it. Do better, but I also feel like it's hard to have that same feeling when with VFX artists, they get undercut all the time. Yeah. They're, you know, being exploited all the time. And I feel like if we're going to be upset at a small piece of AI art being employed in a low budget film, we need to also use that same sort of sentiment towards the exploitation of the FX artists on these giant films.
Yeah.
That, you know, I've worked in, you know, I mean, mine was very small in comparison, but working on Arrested Development, there was some VFX that we farmed out on that. And yeah, like the way that these VFX work is that a company essentially puts in a bid to work on a show not knowing what they're getting into, mm-hmm. and wanting to get hired, they will lowball it so that they can get hired, and then the production can exploit that. That, again, mine was pretty small beans. No one was really being exploited on us because we had like 150 VFX shots in an entire season of television. Like, that's nothing. Where, you know, but even on that, like, there was still a lot of, you know, going back of like, hey, this scene got re-edited. We need you to redo these effects because we changed the camera angle. We changed the number of shots. And, you know, you multiply that to a large budget film that is, you know, VFX heavy, like a Marvel film, and that becomes hours and hours of wasted work that you're not getting paid extra for because you put in the bid of this is what we want to get paid. Mm-hmm. So, and even that's the VFX company that puts in that bid. Not, you know, that doesn't equate to what the people actually working on it are getting paid, sort of thing. So it's messy, and it's, you know, again, small, the little bit of AI art in this is not, you know, it's definitely robbing someone of some work, but we live in a world where there's exploitation
like
on
all
a
the
bigger
time.
Scale that you should be more upset about, I feel like.
Yeah, so. And for me, I think we're very early into this AI-generated stuff because, like, 2022 when it popped up, all of us were having fun with ChatGPT and, like, all of it in general, and then slowly it, like, turned sour because we realized, like, people are going to lose their jobs
it is a slippery slope of, like, you let this slide, it's easier for more things, and especially as the technology advances, this we were able to, you know, eagle-eyed viewers could say, like, that doesn't look right, and find the flaws in it that are like, oh yeah, that was definitely AI. In another year, you might not even
knows?
Be able
I
to
mean,
know.
They might be able to give their humans five fingers in the right spot for once.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So, again, a much larger debate that is worth thinking about,
part of it is just I'm interested to see how far the conversation gets as, like as you're saying, as it advances and.
So, all right. So that was Late Night with the Devil. Again, we got three new films opening up at Art House this weekend, and lots happening at Babcock as we get into April. So arthousebillings.com to see all that's happening in our theaters. Arliss, what are you most excited for in April?
In April itself, Mandy. I wish I could go to that showing.
Yeah, we got a late night of Mandy on April 20th. So, come on down to the theaters, and we'd love to see you. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.
All right, bye.